Welcome to episode 10 of Hot Air in 2018. My name is Greg Esser. I usually bring you the podcast every other week or so during the regular season. A special treat this week, I've got a back-to-back feature I recorded last week with Christian Boxley. This week, I've got Joe Richards on and an exciting interview with the second-year Breeze player. The reason I bring you the second episode, though, is not because of my stellar interview lineup, but it is because there is more action on the field for the DC Breeze. Last week we knew they had wrapped up a playoff spot. This week we know that it is not the last seed in the playoffs, the third seed. It is in fact the second seed. They got that second seed by decisively, soundly beating the New York Empire last week here in Washington. A 10-point victory for the Breeze looked very similar to the first victory they had against the Empire in 2018 here in Washington as well. It was a close one on the road when they played up in New York. These teams have matched up three times this year. But again, decisive victories at home for the Breeze. Their first round playoff matchup is also with New York Empire. It occurs also here in Washington, D.C. at Catholic University. And so I think that bodes well for how this matchup will play out. The dates on that game are July 21st. It's a 6:30 p.m. game. And as I mentioned just a moment ago, at Catholic University. But the reason I think New York looks to have lost some of its prowess doesn't look like it's going to pose as big of a threat. You know, hopefully I'll knock on wood here, but my analyst hat is on. Is really the New York defense that we've always known the team for, the Empire, that defensive powerhouse, has not looked as sharp this year. Yes, their offense clicks. It's got big players on it. Josh Alora has really stepped up this year. Bo Kittredge, the new import from the West Coast. Also, of course, can't overlook Ben Yott, who's had a stellar season in his own right. The offense looks fine, better than average, why they are here. But I think the defense has taken a big step back. Babbitt has not played a full year, and his blocks are way down. Ryan Drost also blocks way down this year. As a team, New York has 27 less blocks this year. That's 14% less blocks. They are relying on the opponent to give them the disc instead of taking it away as they have in the past. It's a very different defensive look than what we expect out of New York. I'll be interested this weekend to see what happens. I encourage you to go out to that game. I think it will be exciting. New York games often are. But what we have seen in 2018 is a Breeze team that has not been threatened, particularly on offense. And when they have secure throwers, as the Breeze have demonstrated this year, they've got several handlers very capable of making the secure pass. They march it up the field with great confidence and score regularly against the Empire. Speaking of what the Breeze will look like this weekend, I will say I think there's some tough roster decisions in store for what the Breeze bring to the playoffs. It'll be important in the New York game. It'll be even more important if they end up beating New York, as I predict here. But going to Toronto, what will the road roster look like for the Breeze as they go up there? They lost to Toronto by 10 points early this year, and they beat Toronto here in D.C. Is that 10-point differential really representatory of the road splits, or does it have something to do with the roster that was taken to Toronto earlier this year? What will the Breeze roster look like on that road trip and against New York? I have some speculation. I'll be interested particularly if guys that don't look to have valued the disc that much in 2018 make that roster. Xavier Maxtat, Austin Bartenstein, they have played in the top 20 in terms of their points played on the Breeze this year, but they both have below 90% completion percentages. And they're guys that are in the backfield, they're making a lot of throws. Are those guys still going to make the roster for the playoffs? I think there are other great options on the roster for those types of positions. Guys that have not played in the top 20 points this year, guys like Nate Castine or Max Castle, will those guys get into the rotation a little bit more? I also think there are some vacancies, some holes in the defensive line. Particularly, as I talked to Joe Richards this week, he sustained a season-ending injury last week. Who's going to get the call to step up and play regular points on the D-line? I look at guys like Pete Mancini, Aaron Langley, Alexander Fall. Are those guys going to get the call to play in the postseason roster, even though they have not been in the top 20 most points played this year for the Breeze? Again, your playoff roster, your active game day roster, only 20 people. That's why I keep looking at that top 20 cut. I like that Fall has the blocks that Joe Richards has historically gotten this year. But I do like that Mancini is a more reliable thrower, and I think his defensive style is a little bit more shut down. So I'll be interested. I think one of those three guys is likely to make this roster, but I'll be interested to see who. In fact, maybe Daryl Stanley will take two. The last thing I want to talk about up front is the MVP conversation. I have slowly infiltrated the podcast this year from the very early stages about the MVP candidacy of Rowan McDonald. This week's no different. I think he's deserving to be in the conversation. His numbers jump off the page at me. I've got his full season stats queued up here. We can finally talk about those. He completed 393 passes, nearly a 96% completion percentage. He had 47 assists and 38 goals while netting 11 blocks. Only 3 drops in that time period. One tick against the campaign, and those are all phenomenal numbers, but one tick against the campaign is that he only played in 10 games this year. I like to look at an MVP candidate that's been a little bit more committed to attending games. And I try to get a benchmark against some of the other stars of the Eastern Division, guys that I have the visual data on that I've seen play this year. And so I arrived at a couple other names I just threw into the conversation, get this conversation started. Ben Yacht, obviously the guy from New York that is making and driving their offense right now. He had 51 assists, which is more than Rowan. He had 41 goals, which is more than Rowan. He had 12 blocks, which is one more than Rowan. All those numbers very close to Rowan's, but just a tick higher. And that gave me pause for concern. He's also played 13 games, you know, only missing one game. I think there is, again, a reason to really value that type of commitment to the team. But what really sets him apart in my mind, and a larger discrepancy than any one of those counting numbers, is their completion percentage. Ben Yacht, down at 91%, 91 and change. So nearly 5% lower than Rowan's completion percentage. He's throwing a lot riskier balls. Yeah, he's getting some assists out of those. But I think those are coming more widely on 50-50 throws. So I still am, even though kind of across the counting numbers, Ben Yacht's got, what, 1 to 4 more than Rowan? I am discounting his candidacy based on that completion percentage. I try to get some defensive players in the mix in the East Coast. And here's the astounding thing. Blocks all around in the East this year are hard to come by, making Jeff Babbitt's candidacy last year look like a real outlier. You know, why couldn't he win that MVP award when he's putting up 50 blocks or whatever it was in 2017? We might look back on that and say, that's a real missed opportunity. Defense like that does not happen regularly. Del Rico, of the Breeze, Rico Johnson, really turns to be one of the defensive standouts in the East, even though he split his time very evenly on defensive and offensive line. His counting numbers look good, if not great. Again, there were a lot of offensive points in there, so hard to kind of look at those objectively and say they were coming from a defensive line player. 23 assists, 36 goals, but his 9 blocks really stand out in the crowded field of the East as slightly better than everybody else. Too bad he couldn't get to that 20 benchmark, that 25 benchmark. I think that would really leap him into my MVP candidacy, but I was trying to get a defensive player. That's where my mindset often is when I played Ultimate. Certainly the bulk of my points on the Breeze have happened on the D-line. I'm looking at Del Rico, but I can't elevate him into that conversation because he didn't play quite enough D-line, and the blocks in the end just really aren't there. One guy that really jumped off the page at me in the East, though, and I want to throw his candidacy out there, too, as much as I don't want to stump for the opposition. You know, this is maybe I'll file this under spirit of the game. Sean Mott of Philadelphia just put in a stellar work this year. He beats out Ben Yacht and Rowan in both assists with 55 as well as goals with 42, topping them in both those categories, just outstanding. He's got the double-digit blocks to back it up, even though he's playing mostly O-line. His completion percentage falling between Yacht and Rowan's, nearly a 93%. Mott's candidacy this year should not be overlooked. He played in all 14 games. I like that dedication. The only one tick I will say against Mott is that it's a team thing, and your MVP should be putting you over the edge. Had Philly made the postseason here, maybe I'd be singing a different tune, but I think that's the one knock against Sean Mott. I like Rowan a lot. I think I want to push that candidacy, but don't overlook Sean Mott. Hopefully he's a finalist as well. All of that said, let's get into some content here with Joe Richards. I've got our sponsors to go through. They support the Breeze. You should support them. Papa John's Pizza, Spectrum Management, Port City Brewing Company, Oak Creek Ultimate Apparel, Murphy's Grill, American Ultimate Academy, and Universe Point Cleats. Also, special thanks to Cobalt CRM Solutions, the last one of our sponsors, and our nonprofit partner, Spirit of the Sport, the American Equity Invite, and ForestPlanet.org. Thanks so much for listening to Hot Air. Play us in Brook Royals. I am sitting down with son of the mother of George, the mighty oak himself, Joe Richards. Warm up that microphone. Welcome to Hot Air.
Hello, hello. How's it going? Thanks for everyone tuning in. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad to have you on the program here. Got a lot to talk about because the Breeze, I mentioned last week, have clinched a playoff berth. But this week, we know the playoff spot. We know the playoff matchup. We can talk about that last game of the season against New York. We can talk about the future. Joe, are you excited?
Oh, yeah. Excited for the rest of the season and for this podcast. It's the first time for everything, but I think I can do it. Nerves aside, I think I'm good.
You'll be a fan favorite, I'm sure, immediately.
Gotcha.
A fan favorite on and off the field for Joe Richards. Although I tried to hype your excitement, and it sounds like you will be excited for the playoffs. Unfortunately, we've got to start off with the bad news, which is you're going to take those playoffs in from the sideline. What happened to you? You're walking in here injured. I see a sling on your arm.
Yeah, so last game against New York, we were early in the third quarter, and we had a pretty good game so far and was excited to play the rest of the half. And I'm not going to name any names, but someone throws a flick.
Oh, I'm going to name names. He's breaking my heart here. Rico.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, much respect to Rico. He came up to me after the play and apologized. He's a great guy. I mean, it's no one's fault. It's sports, stuff happens, injuries
happen.
But
in your defense, it was catchable.
It was catchable, yes.
Because you caught it.
I did catch it.
But walk me through what happened on the play.
So we get a D, couple of throws into New York's offense, and we're working it down the field. Our offense is going great. We're swinging it back and forth, and we get it on the end, or Rico gets it on the end zone line, and he looks to make a throw for an S cut for me or either Reese Bergeron. We're both in the general vicinity. And he throws it, and it's got a little less on it than he wants, than he would like for it to have. At least that's what I'm assuming. But I go to turn left to make the S cut. I'm thinking I'm going to have to sprint, AUDL, big fields. I'm thinking I got at least 10 yards to run this dish down.
Yep.
And it starts to drop quickly. And I, for last second ditch effort, I dive for it with my weight going forward and my left arm parallel to the ground. And I heard a crack. Luckily, I caught it. As soon as I caught it, I held onto it for a few seconds, knowing that, someone might contest the call, or if I drop it, it might be questionable. So I hold onto it for a couple seconds. As soon as I hear the whistle blow, I drop it and I start to roll around in pain. A couple of my teammates are like, "Hey, don't roll, that's dumb." Well, at least they didn't say that to me, but that's what they're thinking. But they say, "Don't roll around," so I kind of sit there face down, clutching my shoulder, and the trainer comes over, asks me what's wrong. Brian, our trainer, he's great, lets me sit there, kind of assesses the pain, assesses where I am, and, he lets me take my time, which is great, and Rowan's right next to me, just telling me to breathe, and I get up and I walk off the field. I'm thinking my shoulder's out of place. Brian's thinking my shoulder's out of place. He puts me in a sling. He feels it for even more assessment, and he basically says, from his prognosis, at point blank zero, that I have a separated shoulder.
Yeah.
And that just, so my heart sunk. I was like, that sucks. I sat down on the bench and I looked at him and said, "When is this going to be over? What's the estimated time for this?
Yeah.
A week, 2 weeks? Give me the rundown right
Put
now.
Put me back in
know,
there, sure.
I want to
yeah.
know, yeah, exactly. I want to know the next time I can play ultimate."
Yep. Okay, so you're on the field. You hear so what's the response to that, I guess? What's his response on the field, and then what did you find out off the field?
So basically, after I sat down on the bench and I'm asking him these questions, I'm saying, when can I come back? He's not going to give me a clear answer because he doesn't know how bad it is.
Yep.
Just from his, diagnosis that he just gave.
He's a professional.
Exactly, yeah. And then Nate Castine, who's had some shoulder problems and really knows about, physical, how somebody's body works, stuff like that. I think he's a physical therapist. I'm not 100%, don't quote me on that.
I think that's right.
Yeah, so he comes over and he's assessing me also, just helping me out. Not trying to take over Brian's job at all, but just making sure that I'm okay and what I'm feeling. And
Nate Castine and Brian got into a fight right on the sideline.
They did. They're like, "This is what's wrong. No, this is what's wrong." No. So Nate kind of sees my shoulder and he kind of says the same thing. He's like, "Yeah, it looks like it's out." And he kind of rubs my other shoulder and is just like, this sucks, you know, this is bad right now. And I'm asking him too. Like, I'm asking anybody who's going to tell me when I can get back in. I'm like, so, if you have you ever had this? How quick was your recovery? What's the quickest recovery known to man? What's the longest? You know what I mean?
What record can I beat with this? Sure.
Exactly.
I like that mentality.
When can I come back?
You know?
And Nate is basically like, this is going to take a minimum of a month.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you can't rush these things. It's a shoulder injury. I mean, every injury is serious in its own nature, but recovery is, you know, pertinent. You can't rush this.
So then what's the official medical diagnosis you
get? So the x-rays that I took a couple days ago, the doctor deemed it a grade 3 separation in my shoulder, and nothing wrong with my clavicle, nothing. So basically what it is the ligament that's holding the joints in the place is shot.
Okay.
How bad it is, I won't know until tomorrow when I go to my ortho appointment, but from what the doctor said, and he quoted that he wasn't, I'm going to quote him and say that it's not his specialty, his shoulders, and that he's not going to give me 100% definitive, this is what's wrong and this is how long you're going to be out, but he said it looks pretty bad.
Yeah.
That being said, the last couple of days, I felt great. Movement's coming back slowly, but it's feeling good. I'm able to lift my arm, which is leaps and bounds from where I was a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
That also being said, I'm not going to rush anything. I'm going to let it take its course. I'm going to wait until tomorrow, get the full assessment, and see where I am from there.
All right, get that full-blown assessment,
yep.
And but it doesn't sound good for playoffs for Joe Richards in 2018, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, no, I mean, it doesn't, and you know, at the end of the day, I wish I could be out there with my teammates, but I know they're going to do everything they can to get farther in the playoffs and make it a championship weekend.
Who are you going to point to right now on Hot Air and say, they're stepping up in my place, here's a guy that's getting some extra legs, some extra inches in the air, because Joe Richards is out and they're stepping up for me?
I want to say Langley. Aaron Langley is definitely stepping up.
I like that.
Great defensive guy.
Great defense.
I mean, he's played for Maryland, played under Darryl. He's great, and he is definitely going to step up from where I was. He's going to make his mark, and he's going to get an opportunity to play, and I'm excited for him.
I like that. Cool. Well, that's a good call out.
Yeah.
We'll see what Aaron Langley can bring us in the playoffs here.
For sure.
So, talk to me then. You kind of talked a little bit about the ebb and flow of that game as it pertained to you,
mm-hmm.
but give me that in play and then that sideline recap. Another very successful outing against New York. They've had two here. They've both been in the district. It was a closer game when you traveled to New York.
Yep.
But this is typically a team that we say the Breeze plays very close and competitively against.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are the keys to success when you're winning by 8 points or whatever it was?
Yeah. So, you know, playing New York a lot during the regular season, I guess deems them our quote-unquote rivals. I wouldn't say that there's any bad blood between us, but we definitely know each other. We know each other's styles. We know each other's gameplay. We know each other's players, their tendencies, and we study a lot on each other because we see each other so much in the regular season.
Yeah.
That being said, we went into the game with the mentality of, yes, we beat them last time, but historically our games have been really close, and we weren't looking at what can we do to maybe pull out a couple points here or there because it's usually been close. We were looking to go full-blown, it's all on us. We weren't going to sit there and take a couple shots, you know, throw a couple punches and then wait until New York responds. We were just going to do our own thing. So that was our mentality coming into it. Brad Scott, Rowan, you know, great guys, great captains. They really do let us know what's going on. And they say, look, like, yes, we've played them a lot. Yes, you know some tendencies from some guys. But we're not going to let that dictate how we play. We're going to take it into consideration. Yes, like, we'd be foolish not to.
Uh-huh.
But we're going to go into this game not caring who we're playing against.
Yep.
Yes, it's New York. Yes, you know, it's a Saturday, you know, afternoon, night, whatever. It's usually when we play, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we're going to go into this game controlling it ourselves. And we're going to respect the other team by playing the best ultimate that we can play.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, if you're not playing up to your best, like the par that you want to set, like if you're not playing to your highest bar, you're not respecting the other team. And that's not what Spirit of the Game is about. That's not what Ultimate was founded on. That is, you're going out there, giving your best effort, and seeing if the other team can match that.
Yeah.
So that's what our mentality was going in New York. And we pulled off the win, which is great. And
yeah.
It doesn't matter if we beat them by 1, 2, 10. You know, at the end of the day, we are thinking we won, and we won based off our effort.
Yep.
And
feeling good about what you put into the game.
Exactly.
Either win or lose.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So then tell me how that manifested itself in a more strategic capacity on the field. You know, what were the actual developments in game that led to a big victory?
Yeah, so our offensive, our O-line is just great. I mean, guys like Nate Pryor, who have like 99.9% completion rates. And, you know, Lloyd, who's always smart with a disc, and all the handlers on O-line are very smart. And all the cutters, Matt Kerrigan, you know, very seasoned.
They're converting. Hordach.
I mean, all these guys have so many years under their belt.
And they're converting on the regular,
Exactly. So we don't have to worry about them. What we did have to worry about was how we were going to generate breaks on New York's offense. Mm-hmm. They got guys like Ben Yat. They got guys like Bo Kittredge.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, and in the past, too, I would say New York is this fabled D-line. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say their D-line players have become slouches.
Yeah.
But really, 2018 in New York is about stacking that O-line.
Oh, yeah.
The Ben Yats and the Bo Kittredges joining
exactly.
up.
Exactly. And that's some fun ultimate to watch.
When
you got really good O guys.
Well, don't watch too much, especially if you're on D-line.
That's right. Don't just sit there. That's good.
What are you doing to combat that?
So we were, when we were playing D, our main focus was how do we generate breaks? And not only that, but on the other side of the disc, how are we patient? How is our offense going to flow? And how do we convert that to a break? Because those would ultimately win games, at least for DC Breeze. DC Breeze.
Like the horse?
Exactly. But so we made sure if we got a turn, whether their mistake or us forcing a turn, or them just throwing it away, whatever the case may be, it doesn't matter. The fact of the matter is we have the disc now, and what are we going to do with it? So we took those Ds that we got or that we earned or that they just turned, and we turned it into a smart, easy offense and patient O. We have this tendency on D-line, I think this is pretty universal for a lot of D-lines, just sling it, you know,
because,
you know, who really cares? Like, you have that mentality of, like...
Take a shot.
Yeah, exactly, you know, and me personally, you can quote me on saying this, Joe Richards likes exciting plays. However...
I will quote you, I'm going to save that soundbite.
Joe Richards likes exciting
plays. A quote of Joe Richards saying that Joe Richards likes exciting plays.
Exciting
I like
plays.
That.
I really do.
I know that guy, sure.
Yeah, I like the big plays, you know, I like the air battles, I like, you know, all the highlight reel plays. I love that. You know, that's what I came in ultimate thinking I was going to do and that I was going to be successful at. But on our D-line, we have to have that maturity. And we have to have that, you know, just kind of poised to work our offense and take care of the disc and turn those into breaks. You know, because a break is such a great thing in ultimate. When I found out what a break was a couple years ago, I was like, you're telling me that they can't score and that we get it and we score on them and they have to come back out and play again.
When you put it line. Like that, sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, that's like ultimate, like, that's like the ultimate, like, man, you got them, right? So those breaks were huge for us and we have to be, we were patient, we were chilly with the disc, you know, we were just really...
Strategically, were you doing anything different on defense?
My role is a finisher, on D-line and, you know.
Well, when you don't have the disc yet, you're not a finisher.
That's right. That's true. But Daryl just tells me cut to the end zone. But yeah, so I was trying to time my cuts a little bit better. I have a tendency to at least in years past and, you know, a little, I guess this year too, is to take over guys' space because I feel like I'm, you know, 6'3", and I'm a big guy, and I can make all these cuts, but it's...
Not only do you feel like you're 6'3", but you are 6'3".
Exactly,
I will let everyone know.
Well, I am 6'3", I feel like I'm 6'7", on the
field. Okay.
And so I feel like a huge target, and so I have a tendency to cut guys off, and I've been meaning to work on it, and I have been working on it, but for me, I had to understand that I'm not the only guy out there. There's other guys that can burn their guy. There's other matchups that are better than mine.
Yeah.
That have a bigger mismatch than mine. And so the higher percentage face off between somebody like Reese Bergeron and somebody else, like if he has a mismatch that's better than mine, he's gonna get the cut.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I had to learn to kind of holster my, you know, I want the disc, I want to finish. I had to holster that and let other guys cut and let other guys play the game.
Without giving away the keys to the Chevy here, is there a way that you communicate on the field with each other to let each other know where the mismatch is?
So our D-line's funny. We just kind of assume that we all have mismatches when the disc is turned.
Yeah.
But no, there's not like a single call out. There's not like a, you know, like
a wink.
Woo!
There's not an owl in the background.
No.
The cardinal cry for
definitely
Catholic
not.
University?
Definitely not.
Okay.
But there's just a sense, and that's giving kudos to the guys who are on the field that they know when they're mismatched. Not just because they think so highly of themselves, you know what I mean? It's not because someone thinks that they're better than them just because. It's because they see the player's tendency on offense when they're playing it on D against them and say, oh, this guy's not as fast as me. Oh, this guy doesn't want to guard me on defense because he's an O guy.
Yeah.
Or, you know, stuff like
that's
that.
That's every O guy.
Yeah.
That's spoken by a true defensive mind.
That's true. We see that, and you have to have the maturity to be like, okay, this guy's a mismatch with me, or someone else has a better mismatch, and we're going to go to that player.
So this is the second year in a row the Breeze have made the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about a little bit going forward now. Mm-hmm. While the Breeze won the first game last year, mm-hmm. they, you know, we struggled going to Toronto. Mm-hmm. We're setting up a similar scenario this year where there's a home playoff game followed by potentially a road trip to Toronto. Mm-hmm. You want to talk to me a little bit about the mood in the camp then going into that pair of games, and was there any lessons learned last year, any adjustments that you could see and help us to identify?
Mm-hmm. So last year I wasn't on the playoff roster, but I was able to be with my team and support them in a capacity where I was on the sidelines.
Yeah.
I was making sure, you know, that, you know, guys had, you know, everything they needed, and I was able to just be a fly on the wall, which is great for a first year player, especially.
Maybe you can make some of those observations even a little better.
Yeah. So, I mean, being that guy, you know, and being able to like kind of be in the background and see those guys, what they did in those moments was huge for me, and I learned a lot. Listening in on the conversations and just kind of viewing how we played last year and this year, is we always go into playoffs and any game post regular season is we think about it and we're just like, anyone can lose here.
Yeah.
This is anyone's game. It doesn't matter if it's Toronto, it doesn't matter if it's New York, it doesn't matter if it's Philly, it doesn't matter. Records don't matter anymore.
Yep.
Okay?
It's one game.
We're in the thick of it. That's right. And so we have a home game against New York and then we have an away game against Toronto. So that's our schedule. But if you ask the guys on the team, like, what's their biggest concern, they're not going to say, oh, Toronto at home because last time we were there, we lost by X amount. Or New York because we beat them, so they're gunning for us. It's not worrying about any other team. It's worrying about ourselves. So that playoff mentality is, like you said, the one game. It's one game. Whoever wants it more, whoever makes the best decisions is going to come out on top. And we have to make sure that we're that team. And we make sure of that by being focused. Make sure that by if we're winning by X amount, we don't lose focus.
Yep.
We make sure that by even if we're losing by X amount, we don't give up. You know, it's just these little things that you know, our captains and that other people on the team and that our coach have instilled in us that it's like, it's one game.
Yeah.
If you to advance, you have to win.
Yeah.
You're fighting for your lives right now. And whoever's going to win is going to be the person who wants it more. And so that's the playoff mentality that we had.
Tell me about, I mean, traditionally the East flows through Toronto and a road game up there will be very tough for the Breeze any year, but certainly this one. Mm-hmm. They've represented the East in the playoffs for 6 years in running.
Yep.
Anything you can think about in going up on Canadian soil and trying to take away a victory in that one?
Mm-hmm. So last time we went to Toronto, it was very, very underwhelming from as our performance. It wasn't a very close game in any means, but we saw how we took that loss and we learned from it, obviously. That's what good teams do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, last time we were in Canada and last time we were playing against Toronto, we didn't have our best performance, but we took notes about what we could change when we're playing against them.
Yep.
That being said, during the regular season, we were the only team to beat them. We handed them their first L, and we felt good about it.
But that's right. They're 13-1 because of a Breeze matchup here in the district.
And that's because of us, and that's a great feeling. But at the same time, we know by that game, it was a very close game, very exciting game. By that game, by taking that W, we realized that our ceiling is much higher than we thought it was going to be. Having Toronto, an undefeated team, come to our home and play us, we were like, man, this is tough. But we were able to realize that we are so much better than we like anticipated. Not saying that we, you know, thought we were bad or anything. Not saying we thought Toronto was so out of reach that we couldn't, you know, beat them.
Yeah.
But we just played our best ultimate that day and we came out on top. So that, I think that experience right there gives us the confidence to say it doesn't matter where we play, home or away, Toronto, not Toronto, it doesn't matter who we play. We can beat anyone on any given day. And so I think that's the mentality that we have to have going to Canada on the road trip.
Yeah, certainly it's a badge of honor that every team that you guys have played that are also in the postseason, you have at least one victory against in 2018.
Yeah, it's very whether it's confidence boosters.
Raleigh, Toronto, or New York.
Yeah.
So that's most of the content that I wanted to cover here about the Breeze season so far. We're looking forward to a lot. Mm-hmm. I want to lighten it up a little bit. We've got two regularly occurring segments. Mm-hmm. The first of which is called That's My Dad.
That's my dad!
Do you have, in your rich college experience, a heckle story that would fit this segment? I know that Mary Washington has a pretty good rep for being a very spirited team, but there is spirited heckling as well. It's very much a part of the ultimate culture. Mm. Tell me what you got in ways of a heckle story.
So I don't have many because I try not to talk on the field unless someone else talks to me.
And nobody talks to you ever.
No one really talks to me. And if they do, I'm not really listening. But yeah, like you said, like Mog is mother of George. Is a great spirited team. We're led by Zach Norbaum, who won the Donovan this year.
Yeah, so from the top, you're getting some spirit.
Yeah, I'm gonna plug that real quick. Not that everyone doesn't already know, but yeah, Zach's just a great spirited player, and he takes on the spirit of our team, and he kind of embodies what we're about. That being said, last year, it might have been last year or 2 years ago, at regionals, we were playing High Point, and it became one of those games where you had some close calls, and it becomes chippy.
Yep.
We've all been there.
Yep.
And it's, I don't want to say it's nobody's fault, but you know, once it starts to go there, there's, especially in college, there's very minimal chance it comes back to being spirited and getting back to the spirit of ultimate, you know?
Yep.
So we're playing against, High Point. It's getting kind of chippy. I'm all about playing physical. I'm a physical player. And when I play physical and someone gives it back, I love that. When I play physical and someone's like, hey, that's a little bit too much, I'm like, you're right, you know?
Set the tone.
Exactly.
Yep. Yeah. Takes two people to kind of set it.
Testing the waters. And so this one guy wasn't backing down. I want to say he was like 5'7", 5'8", so he was probably staring at my nipples. I don't know. Something like that. So we start to get a little chippy. And, you know, either we score or they score. We're not really involved in the play. We're just kind of jabbering. And then... The play's over, we're walking off the field, and we start to get a little bit chippier, and you know, it starts to become name calling, and it starts to, you know,
spiraling.
Exactly,
yeah.
Little playground insults, and back and forth, and then out of nowhere, well, I shouldn't say out of nowhere, we're jabbing back and forth, he calls me a fat ass, which is, if you want to have an insult,
yeah.
Don't look at the 6'3 guy who weighs 120 pounds soaking wet yeah. And say, fat ass. Like, yeah. That doesn't really make sense.
That's just inaccurate.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, he kind of dug himself in a hole, and after that, I just kind of laughed.
This is not a best heckle story. This is a worst heckle story. This is just an inaccurate heckle story.
Yeah. I wish I could just give you the jersey number player. And just, yeah. But, so I go on the sidelines, and everyone's like, you know, because in ultimate, nothing's really hidden. You know, you're on the field, and if something happens, everyone's watching. And they're just like, oh, what was that one guy saying? Like, what was going on? And I was like, well, he called me a fat ass. And from then on, you know, it just became a team running joke. You know,
yeah.
Joe's the fat ass. Lose some weight. Go go jog. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. So that
lose
was probably,
some pounds there, bud.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know. So that was probably my only heckle story I've ever really thought about.
It got latched on by the local team. So then it became the heckle after it was branded by the High Point guy.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, that's great. A good heckle story for sure. Other segment I like to do on here is called Over Underrated. Mm-hmm. For you listening at home, hopefully you know it well. I'm going to give Joe a noun here. It might be ultimate related. It might be pop culture related. We'll see how he responds. I might have to grill him if he's giving me something that's just totally out in left field. See what Joe's got on tap for us today. First of all, I know you are a hairstyle aficionado on the field. Tell me whether you think it is over underrated to sport the man bun. There's a couple on the Breeze this year.
Whew, okay.
This could turn some heads. You could make some enemies.
This is tough because I'm if you knew me about a year ago, I was sporting the man bun hardcore. I had the whole nine. I couldn't go so
the whole bun.
Yeah, exactly. Whole
the
bun.
Whole roll.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's what you're saying. The whole bun. But yeah, there's a couple guys on our team who have the man bun. Like Matt Neely's rocking a nice one.
Yes, he is.
Rowan rocks a nice one from time to time. You don't really see it up. But I'm going to say it's overrated.
Overrated?
I'm going to say it's overrated.
You're beyond the man bun.
Yes, not because I don't have one anymore and I can make fun of people who do. It's not that. I respect the man bun. I respect the hair. I respect growing it out. It looks great on some people. But it's become a point where it's like, people who should not have man buns, what should not and should never be, have become norms.
So there's been new man bunners?
Yes.
There's bunnies? Been
new, I
man
think,
bunnies?
I think man bunnies is the...
Yeah. That have ruined the man bun
that
for you?
That kind of ruined it for me just because, you know, they do it because they see it projected on social media or just, you know, in mass media, and they're just like, oh, that's cool, and they should never get it.
Is there a hairstyle you're looking to for the future?
I was actually thinking about growing my hair back out.
Oh my goodness. You heard it here first. That's breaking news.
But I need a big boy job, so probably not going to come back. But, you know, there's days that I miss it, that I look at scroll pictures through my phone. I'm like, man.
Nostalgic
nostalgia
exactly. Media posts.
Oh, yeah. I'm like, man, who is that guy? Bring that guy back sometime. But
next up, you've just finished a game, maybe at the pro level, maybe it's a college game. You head out with the team for a meal. Over underrated. The post-game burrito.
It's underrated.
It's underrated. You're going for a burrito.
It's very underrated. I think that the post-game burrito satisfies all my needs that I'm looking for.
Heals you.
A post-game meal.
Yeah.
Oh, it definitely does.
What are you getting that burrito that makes it so good?
So I'm getting some white rice in there. I'm getting some black beans.
Are we ordering at Chipotle right now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Just walk me through the order. Hey, welcome to Chipotle. Mm-hmm. Joe Richards, nice to see you out here. I see you every Thursday. I see you every Saturday. I know you get the regular, but just remind me.
A little disclaimer. I try to get the most food at Chipotle for the cheapest amount of money.
Yeah.
Because I'm a college student. That's what we do.
So that's like when you get like one of the meats and then you're like, oh, and actually, can I just get a little?
Yeah, but you never say extra. That's the ringer right there that people don't know. You just say, hey, can I get a little bit more of this? And they don't know what to do. Like sometimes you'll get a person who's not experienced and be like, is it extra? Is it this? Is that? And they'll just put some on without charging, which is great. But so I get a bowl with a tortilla on the side.
Wow.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm yeah. All Wise beyond your years.
Yeah. And so I get rice, white rice with that. I get black beans usually. I get chicken. I'm not a real big spicy guy, but probably only when it comes to burritos. But I get like mild salsa, I get some corn, I get some lettuce, and I get a ton of sour cream because I love sour cream.
Okay.
Sour cream, underrated.
Sour cream. Just, you're asking me a question now. All right. Sounds like a pretty good burrito you're spinning up there.
Oh, yeah.
Next up, a video game I'm not going to lie about. Mm-hmm. I don't know a lot about it.
Okay.
I'm not a big video gamer.
Okay.
But I think you might be. Mm-hmm. Over underrated, Overwatch.
Oh, my. Underrated. I play Overwatch every night.
Yeah, do you play against Markham Schaffner, friend of the podcast?
I don't play against Markham Schaffner. He doesn't. I don't know. One, I don't know what console he uses. And two, if he did, I mean, that'd be awesome. But like, I would want to play with him because I feel like he's really good.
Yeah, he's talked a little smack about Overwatch on this very program.
Really?
Yes.
Like bad or good? Like he's really good.
He's gonna take you down.
Oh my!
Yeah.
No.
Not you personally, but like the general listener, like
gotcha.
Markham
yeah.
Schaffner. Top of his game, he's ready.
Good.
He's ready to take you down in Overwatch.
He might be. Yeah, there's different ranking systems in Overwatch. He might be like Grandmaster by now.
But, yeah. What's your ranking?
So I'm a Diamond right
okay.
now, which is like 3,000 and above. But I usually do DPS, which is damage per second. So I usually am the ones killing people.
Okay.
Yeah, like that. So I sport some Soldier 76, some Junkrat. You know, I do those guys.
All
know.
this jargon that I'm just gonna nod and smile through.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, all right.
So Overwatch is definitely underrated. If you don't have it, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah. Offense taken. Next up, I know you are an NHL fan,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to potentially polarize you from your fan base.
Uh-oh.
Because the recent winners of the Stanley Cup over underrated the Washington Capitals.
Okay, this is going to be tough because my upbringing, my dad's from Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And so
I thought this might be coming.
So I'm a Pittsburgh everything fan. Pirates, Steelers, Penguins, you name it. I'm a big hockey fan also. Did your research, which is great. Washington Capitals, underrated.
Underrated.
Underrated. They're underrated because my dad, being from Pittsburgh, he's not just a Steelers, Penguins, diehard fan. He's not going to be like, oh, whoever they're playing, blah, blah, blah. He's a hockey fan. You know, he likes to see good hockey. And Washington played great hockey this season. And for them, especially for guys like Ovechkin and like Backstrom, and
yeah,
all those guys who have been on the team and stuck with them through all the, let's say the Penguins ruining their dreams in the playoffs for the last number of years. That's my only plug that I'm gonna put in.
Yeah.
But
to
see them kind of, you know, just grow and to be patient and stuff, and for Ovechkin, who's probably the best scorer scorer of our generation. You know, right. You gotta give respect where respect is due. But to see them win and to see guys like that hoist the cup up and just to see really good hockey in the playoffs, that's all that I really want. You know, I'm a Penguins fan, but I'm a hockey fan at the end of the
day. So you enjoyed that victory on the streets of DC either way.
I didn't go out because I didn't want to be found out as an undercover thing with all those people on the. I might not be here talking today if I went out to celebrate with some of my friends that night.
Last up, then you can officially say you have survived the over-under segment. Teammate of yours, both in college and on the breeze, Reese Bergeron. One of the brothers. Mm-hmm.
Reese Bergeron. So I first met Reese in OG, but let me answer the question first.
I actually like that you were leading up to it that way. Keep me in suspense. Yeah. You first met Reese back in 1999, a party on top of the Eiffel Tower.
A stormy night. No, Reese Bergeron, first time I met him was the club season, I want to say 2 or 3 years ago, when OG Boys was founded.
This is your club squad out of Virginia suburbs.
Yes, out of Arlington. And so it's got a bunch of JMU guys on it. It's attracted a lot of attention this year. But it's kind of the OG Boys. Let me be original real quick. OG Boys, that's funny. But let me be...
nicely done.
So the Birch... Hunting it up. So OG Boys, their whole existence is because Zach and I, a couple years ago, we were thinking about playing for a club team. We knew we weren't, or at least I wasn't good enough to make Truck at that point. Zach was trying out and said, if he didn't make it, you know, whatever, let's make our own club team. Because Zach makes a club team every year because, you know, it's Zach. And so we were like, what team can we make that practices once or twice a month and is still really fun to play and can compete at a high level? And we brought the idea to Kyle Fredericks. And he, being a JMU graduate, brought it to a bunch of JMU graduates. And so they kind of took it and kind of did their own thing with it and spun it off and made OG Boys. And our first season was great. You know, our second season, our second season was the last season. But we made Select Flight, which was great. You know, we finished top 7 at regionals.
Yep.
And so that was just, to have that was awesome. Just to think of something, it was like something me and Zach were just talking about a couple years ago. It was like, hey, yeah, let's do this.
Threw it together and it worked out. Yeah,
and so that's the platform that I met Reese on. He played for OG Boys. He plays at Virginia Tech. He's a captain there.
Yes, I misspoke. He's not on your college team.
I've been playing with him for years now because of OG Boys.
So to the point of the question, he is over underrated.
Underrated. You got to watch out for him. He's got like 8 siblings. Like him and like...
they can field their own ultimate team.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No, they got a bunch of that. Like, and their younger brother also plays at JMU, I think. And so he's underrated because he's got so many siblings. So you think, you know what I mean? Maybe one of his siblings.
Yeah, don't pick on him or there's a sibling army.
Exactly. No, but he's underrated. He's so good. He's like, he doesn't look tall on the field, but he's like 6'1", 6'2".
Yeah.
And he's fast and he doesn't stop running. He's got Callahan video out. That's sick. Really cool. But yeah, no, he's underrated. You gotta look out for him. He's gonna be real good in a couple. I mean, he's already real good, but he's gonna be...
Yeah, he's lighting it up this year.
Dirty this year. Yeah, OG Boys special right there.
Perfect. So you survived the segment. The last thing I usually do before I wrap up here is I turn over the mic to you. You've got a hot mic in front of you. You've got the listeners of Hot Air wrapped to their headphones, wrapped to their car, radio. What message, if anything, do you have delivered to the people? Anything you'd like to talk about, Ultimate related, burrito related, the mic is yours.
Let's see. I would say I guess people who are listening to this play Ultimate or invested in some kind of way. But the growth that Ultimate's had in the last couple of years is amazing. And I want to give a personal anecdote. I started playing Ultimate my freshman year in college when I went to Mary Wash to play basketball. It didn't work out. And Zach saw me one day and was like, you're tall. Why don't you play Ultimate?
I want someone to throw to.
Exactly. So from then on, it's just been, you know, 4 years of amazing people, amazing Ultimate. And my dad, who's a very, like, not very outspoken guy, he says very little, but it means a lot, and one of those guys, he was taking me back to school, I think my sophomore or junior year, and he got to hang around some of my Ultimate friends for a little while we were hanging out in Fredericksburg, and, you know, he was going home with my mom. But we were hanging out with a bunch of our friends, and afterwards, my dad and my mom were saying goodbyes, and my dad pulls me aside and is just like, the people you're hanging around are just really great people. Like, I'm so glad with the people you've surrounded yourself with. Like, it's really amazing to see. They're, like, really awesome. And for my dad to say that, he doesn't really go out on a limb and say anything. Yeah. Not that he doesn't say anything, but he just doesn't really say stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so it meant,
heartfelt.
It meant a lot to me. And so the people that I've been able to come in contact with through Ultimate, it's just been a blessing. I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing sport with amazing people, and my life is so much better because of it. So if anyone's questioning playing Ultimate, anyone's kind of on the fence about it, you got to do it. It's great.
Nice. Or got a kid that's just getting into it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. My kid's going to play Ultimate for... I'm not even going to introduce him to basketball or football or anything.
Straight to Ultimate.
Just going
to
be a disc in his hand when he comes out of the room, yeah.
Perfect. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. I'm ready to wrap it up here. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Adios.
See ya. Joe Richards likes exciting plays.